And on tonight's program, paying tribute to Sammy Davis Jr.'s 60th anniversary of his Broadway debut in the musical Mr. Wonderful, it's my very great pleasure to welcome back to the airwaves of 96.5 Inner FM via telephone from Los Angeles the Academy, Grammy and Ivor Novello award-winning composer, lyricist, screenwriter and librettist Leslie Briggs. Good evening, Leslie.
Hello, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing very well indeed. And you also had the great honour of being a personal friend of Sammy Davis Jr.
Yes, we knew him for 30 years. He came to London with his one-man show just after we had opened Stop the World, I Want to Get Off, so that was a very long time ago.
Indeed.
And he was in the next theatre to us, just down the road, the Prince of Wales Theatre. And because we opened a week before him, he used to come every night to see our show, and he loved Tony Newley's performing talents, and so we would all have dinner together every night for a week, and after that this great friendship developed, which lasted all our lives.
Indeed, and of course he recorded about 60 of the songs that you and Newley had written, both singly and together over the years.
Well, he recorded 60 of my songs, and he recorded, you know, pretty well everything Newley and I wrote. He just loved the style of the songs, and it was very fortunate because he recorded four songs from Stop the World immediately then when the show was in London, mm-hmm. and they came out in America several months before the show came out in America, so it gave us a great lead-in to the Broadway scene, and he had a big hit with What Kind of Fool Am I, which was an enormous help to it winning the Grammy that year, so it was very fortuitous.
Indeed, it's always an advantage to have the audience coming into the theatre whistling the tunes before seeing the show.
Absolutely, instead of walking out whistling the scenery.
Yes. Indeed. And after Mr. Wonderful in 1956, he returned to Broadway in Golden Boy in 1964. But his third book show on Broadway was, of course, a revival of Stop the World, I Want to Get Off, back in, 1978.
That's right. He'd always wanted to do that part, and it was very interesting the way he adapted it. We rewrote the script to the extent that we made it more American in terms of the jargon in the show. Mm-hmm. But he replaced Newley's mime. Newley did a sort of miming figure to tell the story, and Sammy, of course, translated that into tap dancing. And made a brilliant success. He could have run in it for years, but he couldn't really afford to do it because the kind of money you earn in Las Vegas, you cannot earn in the theatre.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, yes.
But he did it for a year, and it was wonderful fun. Great to see him do it.
And, well, as you said, you revised the storyline. Did you write any additional songs for the score at that particular
yes,
time?
Yes, we promised him one song. We wrote a song called Life is a Woman at the end of Act One, and We could have done more had he been in the show for long, but he just did a few weeks here in Los Angeles, a few weeks in Chicago, and then a limited season at the Lincoln Center on Broadway. But it was a wonderful thing to have. We've got the film on it, and we've got, you know, the soundtrack recording of all he did. And it's very strange because it opened at the Schubert Theater out here, mm-hmm. and he was planning this tour across to New York, and the manager of the theater at the Schubert here said to him the night after it opened, you know, if you want to, we can run here for 2 years. And he could have stayed here and lived at home instead of hoteling it. But it was already booked to go on to Chicago, so that was that.
Mm-hmm, indeed. And in recent years, well, I guess 10 years ago, you were writing a musical devoted to the life of Sammy Davis Jr., simply just titled Sammy.
And that's right. We did it. The problem with doing a show about Sammy is to find someone who can play Sammy, which is virtually impossible.
Exactly, yes.
Sammy turned up one night here at the house about, 20 years ago, I guess. More, God, Sammy's been gone 25 years. What am I talking about? 35 years ago, it must have been. Mm-hmm. He brought a young man, then a young man called Oba Babatunde, wonderful name, who he said, this is the next me. And so we stayed in touch with Oba, and when I wrote the show, he was the obvious person to cast in it, and he did play Sammy in San Diego. We did a season down there. But Ober was too old for the part because I needed an actor who could play Sammy younger and older. The ideal Sammy should be sort of 30 years old so he can age and yet play the young man as well. Mm-hmm. And so now, of course, Ober was late 50s, 60 years old. But it's taken me 6 years to find an actor who is an actor and a singer and a dancer.
Yes.
And he was one of the members of the cast of the songbook show Pure Imagination that I did in London last autumn. His name is Giles Torreira, mm-hmm. and he's a National Theatre actor. And first of all, he's a very good actor, but he's also got the charisma, and he's the nearest thing on this planet to Sammy. And I think he enchanted the audience, and a lot of the reviews said he brings back memories of Sammy Davis without knowing that he was going to play Sammy.
Yes, yes.
So I think we've got the right man. I certainly think we can't do better.
Oh, great. And what format does the show take? Does it include some of the hit songs that you wrote and
yes,
they recorded?
It's a book musical because Sammy's life story is really interesting. The ups and downs of his life were quite amazing. And I've taken about 7 or 8 songs from the Tony Newley era of my life, you know, which Tony and I wrote and Sammy recorded. Mm-hmm. And also I've written about 15 or 16 new ones, which tell the story, you know, in alignment with the book. So it's a very musical show, but it's also pretty dramatic as well, because Sammy's life was pretty dramatic.
Yes, I was watching a documentary on his life just the other day, and, his romance with Kim Novak, which raised the ire of the head of Columbia Pictures at the time, Harry Cohn, who took out a contract on his life, virtually, and said that he had to marry someone of his own race, otherwise...
That's right, well, that features very heavily. That's the end of Act One mm-hmm. in the show. And... you know, because he then married the second blondest person on earth in My Brit.
Yes.
shortly afterwards. So he ran a dangerous path in that era. You know, 50 years ago, it wasn't as, you know, it wasn't as taken for granted as it is now.
Indeed, yes, and also his involvement with the civil rights era too, with Dr. Martin
yes.
Luther King.
Mm. All of that we deal with. The great mentor of his life, of course, was Sinatra. And Sinatra was a good friend to him, and he kept an eye on him and told him when he was getting, you know, the sort of thing that happened, which was really awful. Sammy was going to marry My Brit, mm-hmm. and Jack Kennedy, because he was about to become president, and the Sinatra group were very close to him, and asked if he could postpone the marriage till after the inauguration.
Yes.
Which was very complicated. Sammy, they'd already sent out the invitations, and they did postpone it. Mm-hmm. And what happened was, Sammy was, after he'd done that, he was disinvited to the inauguration party.
Yeah.
That's how rough it was then, in that era, to have mixed marriages, you know.
Indeed, yes, yes.
It's a very sad thought, but that was only 50, 60 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And did you also set yourself the task of having to find actors to portray Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and the other Rat Pack members in your musical?
Yes, actually, the show they did, I don't know if it's been in Australia, they did a Rat Pack show.
Oh, yes, I think it has been down here.
Which reproduced the evenings in Las Vegas. We were happy to have seen that, because what used to happen was we were staying at the Sands Hotel with Sammy, and... after his midnight show, at about 2:30, he'd finish the show, and then Dean Martin would wheel on the trolley of drinks, and then Sinatra and Joey Bishop and Peter Lawford would come on, mm-hmm. and they'd do another hour and a half, just for their own amusement, and the people adored it, you know, because it was just wonderful, off-the-cuff entertainment.
Yes, yes.
Which I've incorporated into the show, that sequence.
Uh-huh. Right. Is it sort of done in a flashback style, or does it just go through his life
chronologically? No, we take his life from the age of 3, because he went out on the road as a vaudeville performer at the age of 3.
Yes, yes.
And if you search around, you'll see there is film of this little tiny kid doing the most amazing, sophisticated dances, and he really did. He sings a song called "I'll Be Glad When You're Dead, You Rascal, You."
Oh, yes, I've seen
and
that.
And he performs it like a veteran grown-up performer. Amazing.
Indeed, yes, full of great confidence. And, well, of course, he performed with his father and Will Maston as the Will Maston Trio, and we heard them earlier tonight in Mr. Wonderful. And, of course, he was said to be the star of the act. Although, I believe in later years, when his father and Will Maston did retire, that he actually continued to pay them an honorarium.
Yes, well, Will was their manager, so he took 20% off the top. And Sammy was paying a third of the other 80% to his father and Will until he was at one, you know, I remember in London he said, do you know I'm still paying? And he, therefore, was receiving about 26% of what he earned and living the life of Riley. Yeah. And that's how he got into debt, because people thought, God, this man is earning a fortune, and he was giving two-thirds of it away, three-quarters almost. It was a very unfair arrangement, but they kept him to it.
Yes, indeed. And as you mentioned, he had a very extravagant lifestyle. And
oh, my God, you've no idea. I mean, we'd have dinner, you know, every night, and he'd have like 18 people with him. You had to practically book a restaurant. You couldn't book a table. You had to have a great space to bring all those people in. A lot of hangers-on.
Indeed, yes. And, of course, when he died of throat cancer in 1990, he owed so many millions in unpaid taxes, too.
Oh, yes. He died heavily in debt. Funnily enough, his son, Manny, who ended up inheriting his widow, Alcaviz, left everything to Manny. And today, I've not seen Manny since he was a little boy. He came here today to talk about things, you know, what we're planning, because there's also interest in the motion picture, and I wanted him to know about it. But he's been living in Chicago since that, and I finally found him, and we had a nice morning chat here today.
Indeed, and did he inherit his father's talent, or has he steered away from show business entirely?
I don't think anybody can inherit that kind of talent, because he went on the road when he was three. He never went to school. He was always traveling on the road with his dad and uncle, and he never, ever had one day in school. So he learned from the school of life, picking up things, and that's why he became so brilliant. He was a mimic by nature, and he copied everything he saw, and you couldn't do that today because there's no vaudeville in existence.
No. I guess, some of the satirical TV programs are the closest that they have to vaudeville these days.
Yes. Well, his grandmother said, you know, the only thing he'll ever be good at is geography because he travelled so much.
Indeed. And how do you finish off the musical? I don't suppose you have his final years, do you? Or do you finish it on a high note when he was perhaps...
No, we finish it on a high note when he got the Kennedy Center Award, which they give to the best of the best. Five people a year get that award. And he got that award in the 60s. And he was at peace with everyone by then. And he was appreciated for what he was by the time it was over. And they came to London. Originally, Frank, Dean and Sammy were going to do a show in the late 80s called The Ultimate Event. And they did the show, but Dean Martin dropped out after a while because he didn't need to be on the road, and Frank loved it. But Liza Minnelli stepped in.
Yes.
And so Frank, Sammy and Liza came to London, and it was they were all over the place. Wonderful. I mean, they did the show everywhere. And then my wife and I, Evie and I, saw the last performance that Sammy ever gave was in Monte Carlo at the Monaco. Once a year they do a special show in Monaco and have great stars. And Frank had done it a number of times, and he said to me, I can't do it again. They're sick and tired of me doing the show every second or third year. And so Frank stood down, and Sammy and Liza did the whole show on their own, and they were both in fantastic form. And the day after, Sammy flew back to America for a dental appointment, and the X-ray from the dentist showed the shadow in his throat, and they discovered the throat cancer that day.
Yes.
The next day after he went back from here. And... he didn't perform anymore after that, and he died 6 months later.
Yes, but being a very heavy smoker during his life, indeed, smoking even while he was singing.
He and Frank used to do, they had a trick together, a vocal trick, mm-hmm. where they would take a drag on a cigarette, sing 8 bars of music, and then exhale. And I often thought that cannot be doing good things to their throats.
No.
But Sammy was, you know, only 64. Frank lived to be 82, and never lost his voice, nor did Sammy, but they had the most amazing set of pipes, those two.
Indeed, yes. And another talent that I didn't realise he had until I saw the documentary was that he was a renowned gunslinger. Indeed, that's an act that he built up for his nightclub act as part of the
Master. Oh, he did that in his act. He learned it from a cowboy actor of the era called Jeff Chandler.
Oh, okay.
In the 40s and 50s, and he was just an absolute whiz at it. And a very interesting thing he did in London, the first time he came over, he did his show at the Prince of Wales Theatre, and he realised that none of the kids in the theatre, you know, the performers, could see him mm-hmm. because they were performing when he was performing. So on his last night, he did a midnight matinee for all the gypsies in all the shows. So you have this enormous enthusiastic audience. And he came on stage at 10 past 12, and he came off at 10 past 5. For 5 hours, he mm-hmm. did, that's what made me think of the gunslinging, mm-hmm. he did every trick in the book. He sang every song, he danced his brains out, and he'd already done 2 shows earlier in the evening.
Yes, yes.
Because it's a Saturday, so you do a matinee, mm-hmm. and then the evening show, and then 5 hours he did at midnight.
Quite extraordinary.
It's amazing. Wonderful man.
Must have had a wonderful stamina. So, I guess Al Jolson was always regarded as the world's greatest entertainer. Do you think that Sammy Davis topped him, or was equally...
No contest. Sammy was number one when it came to entertaining. I mean, you know, I saw the style. I wasn't particularly fond of Al Jolson's style. I realized he was he was a game changer, mm-hmm. and did wonderful things, but I didn't particularly like his style. Sammy was everything I admired as a performer, because he's so talented in so many ways. I mean, he could do everything a performer could do.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever liked him.
Indeed. Well, when does the revised show premiere? Is it going to be in London first before it hopefully goes to Broadway?
Yes, in England first. It won't be in London first. That's too dangerous.
Oh,
we've
certainly.
Got to get it right out of town. So I'm going back next week, and I'm meeting with the producers when I get back. Now that we found our Sammy, we can move.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize how tough it would be. It's taken me 6 years to find Giles Torreira, who will be our Sammy.
Yes, and you're going to make further revisions to the book since it was originally staged in 2009?
Well, we're down to about 3 people to direct the show.
Okay.
And I'll work with the director, but I think I've done so much work on the show since I did it it started out with Quincy Jones, this project.
Mm-hmm.
Quincy and Sammy were very close, and Quincy and I are very close. And it was Quincy's idea that we do this. And when we started writing it, he spent 2 summers with us in France, and I hoped that he would write the music. But in the end, he didn't. It was a new form to him, the writing for the theatre.
Oh, okay.
And so I ended up doing it myself. But Quincy was an enormous help and an enormous influence on it. And he came to see it in San Diego, which was lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote me a beautiful letter about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the full circle.
And has it been recorded to date or merely just in demonstration recordings?
No, because until you get it right. It did very well. It broke every box office record in the theatre in San Diego, but there's no recording facility there really that would work for us. So it will get a cast album when we get a West End production in London, and hopefully that will be in the next 12 months.
Ah, great. And, of course, you recently celebrated your 85th birthday, so I guess it's a continual work which keeps you young and keeps you the mind active and also...
Yes, I would die of boredom. I've got all sorts of things. I'm doing a couple of animated movies out here, which I love. I love animation.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Sammy and a couple of other things on the burner in London. So life is very busy and very full.
Indeed. And unfortunately, we didn't get to see you in Australia this past year.
No, we had hoped to bring Jekyll and Hyde out there. John Frost was going to produce it, and he wanted Anthony to do it. And Anthony felt that he could only do maximum 6 shows a week, mm-hmm. and that wouldn't work. So we've now got it. John's still involved. In fact, he's coming over to... I'm seeing him in Paris in April. He's coming to do it in London now. It won't happen in Australia until afterwards, if London works. But I'm hoping that he will do the Pure Imagination songbook in Australia. He came to the first night in London, John did, and he loved it. So mm-hmm. let's hope that will happen.
Is that a revised version of your review, Brick by Brick by Brickus, which seems...
That was the title that a London producer called Bill Kenwright came up with. I thought I'd buried that. You obviously have heard it.
Well, it's mentioned on your website. It seems to me a sly little wink at Side by Side by Sondheim.
Of course it was, and that's why Bill thought of it. Because Bill Kenwright produced Side by Side by Sondheim in London.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think Steve would ever speak to me again if I did that.
Indeed, a bit of tongue-in-cheek, indeed.
Yes, quite. It was well intended.
Well, every success with the coming production of Sammy, and hopefully we'll see you back in Australia with the Leslie Brickus songbook, Pure Imagination.
Well, I would love to come back. We love Australia, and hopefully something will bring us back soon.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you very much, Leslie, and every success, and thank you for telling us about your friendship with Sammy Davis Jr.
Bless you, Rob. Take care. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.